Tobin, and you're joining the Free and Equal Network today. Today we have Ben Cohen and Jerry Greenfield of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream. Welcome to our show today, guys.
What's going on?
Hi, I'm Ben.
Yeah, me. The other guy, that must be the Ben.
Well, you guys, you really set yourself apart from the rest, you know, in the corporate world of just going out there and really getting engaged and active in the community and things that you do. And I've gotten to know you guys over the last 3-6 months, talking with you and, of course, with Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream and what you guys are about and the fest and Free and Equal. But I want our listeners to get to know you guys personally, who you are, how you came about, your background. So I would love for you to talk a little bit about the humble origins of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream and what your philosophy and vision around the company is all about. It was.
Humble origins.
Yep. Humble.
You know, we started in a old gas station in Burlington, Vermont. We were both 26. Started on a initial investment of $8,000. And our only plan was to be that one ice cream shop. And we were making ice cream in the window in a big rock salt and ice cream making machine. And, you know, Jerry was in charge of making the ice cream, and he did a really good job.
It was really, apparently.
It was really good ice cream.
And, Jerry.
We would sell as much as we could make.
Yeah. You know, I one of the interesting things is Ben and I are friends from junior high school. So we've known each other for 50 years now, and we met in gym class because we were the two slowest, fattest kids in the class, and you get to be good friends when you're slow and fat in gym class together. And so we never had any business background. We opened up an ice cream shop and thought we would do it for a couple of years. We talked about becoming cross-country truck drivers together. So it wasn't a matter of finding a career or starting a business. It was just something to do. And I think that sort of background really put some of the philosophy that we added into the company, which is to be anti-corporate, to run a business the way regular people would want to run it, and to see a business as a neighbor, kind of a wealthy neighbor, but a neighbor in a community.
Well, here's a question from Dennis Morin. And I think, Jerry, you may know Dennis Morin of him. And this is a little bit of a lighthearted question before I get into the nitty and gritty. But he says to you, Jerry, do you miss playing hockey? Hockey, you're a hockey guy, huh, in Arizona. From a former gym teammate, he said, it's great to know that you were just as honest and generous back then and success didn't change you, like your ice cream, knowing you back then. I thought that was adorable.
Yeah, that's, you know, there was a period in my history where my wife was going to graduate school in Arizona, and I went out there with her, and I used to play pickup hockey, and it was fun. But when Elizabeth got done with graduate school, it was my turn to pick where we were going to live, and I wanted to come back to Vermont and hang out with Ben and do the ice cream thing.
Well, that's cute, Jerry. And you guys have family, right? Of course, kids. Do you have kids, Jerry, Ben?
I have a daughter, Aretha, who is, she just turned 24. She just graduated as a speech and language pathologist, and she's getting her first job working at a little school in Vermont, a public school that has 200 kids from kindergarten to sixth grade.
And my wife and I have a son, Tyrone, who's 25. He's in Kansas City, and he's working at a nonprofit called the Free Network Foundation, which is trying to bring affordable internet access to low-income communities.
I'd love to learn more about that. It's a great cause. And so you've got kids in the world and maybe someday grandkids. And I just would be interested, you know, from the generation of, you know, in the 60s, you were a part of with such amazing leaders from that time, whether it's Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, JFK, Huey Newton, Jimi Hendrix, John Lennon, Jerry Garcia, and many more. Can you talk a little bit more about the generation you were a part of?
Yeah. I mean, I think we were really lucky. Ben and I both got out of high school in 1969, and we both started college that next fall. And it was just a time that was full of social activism. As you mentioned, it was the civil rights movement. It was the women's rights movement. There was the Vietnam War and all the protests around that. And you just couldn't help but be affected by everything that was going on around us at the time.
You know, in the 60s, the party system, I mean, they have, you know, with the money behind politics and the party system, they have been pro-war and supporting an industry. You know, I've noticed in seeing your videos, you tend to maybe mention maybe not the good things about the military industrial complex, to put it lightly. Over time, the party system, D's and R's, they've who oppose war within their parties, did, but it's all dried up throughout the time. Do you think the spirit of the 60s can revive the peace movement and see through the smoke and mirrors of establishment politics?
Well, I think the reality of the movement against the Vietnam War was that there was a lot of self-interest involved. The draft was happening, and it was not the so-called all-volunteer army. And I think that the conclusion that I've come to is that a whole lot of the resistance to the Vietnam War was based on the idea that people realized that they themselves were going to end up on the battlefield, and they really didn't want to do it. They certainly understood that it wasn't about defending the country. So they ended the draft, and the other thing that they ended was TV coverage of the war, photos of the realities of war. They ended photos of the dead and dismembered coming home. And they realized that it was those photographs and videos of the horrors of war that led to this tremendous backlash. So they ended the photographs and the videos, and they ended the draft. And, you know, resistance to war, is fairly minimal if you compare it to what it was like during the Vietnam period. Mm-hmm. The big exception to that is in the run-up to the war in Iraq. Around the world, they were the largest anti-war demonstrations ever. The first, and it was the first time that it was coordinated around the world. So that gives me a lot of hope. I still think that we're just barely scratching the surface of how we can use the power of the internet to organize and resist essentially the military, industrial, political complex. But right now, they're winning.
I think that you really nailed it there. The power of the internet and social media is not a force to be reckoned with. and the polls, you know, the 18 to 28 year olds, the kids coming out, I think are going to be pretty strong. And I do sense with the, whether it's a spiritual or interconnectedness, unity, people learning more about quantum physics and, you know, just all the different geometric patterns and the oneness, you know, the coming together. I think there's going to be that positive, powerful, peaceful uprising. And I love that you have that hope there, because a lot of people are losing that hope, and that's what the system wants. And, you know, how you set yourself apart from the rest by going out there and like the gentleman who said, you know, I've known you a long time. You guys haven't changed. And it seems like you haven't changed. You're still you. You're still individuals. You don't let, whether it's successive or Ben and Jerry's or whatnot, those things come and go. But being able to take that and that influence that you have as individuals, and Ben going out there and Occupy and scooping out ice cream and just giving every movement the benefit of the doubt and seeing it beyond Occupy, but those individuals that connected with you, that interacted with you, that's what keeps us real, you know, in this movement, is by being engaged and involved in things that are going on in the world like that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I remember the feeling that I had when Jerry and I were scooping ice cream for Occupy in Zuccotti Park. I mean, I felt very strongly and clearly that, you know, this was the reason why Ben and Jerry's came into being, to support the people that were in Zuccotti Park. And, you know, it was a very emotional time for me.
Well, and Ben, it helped you come up with the idea for your latest campaign.
Yep, the Stampede grew out of Occupy. It's really interesting that happened. You know, the Stampede is about getting money out of politics and supporting the movement to pass federal legislation and to amend the Constitution to say that corporations are not people and money is not speech. And I got interested in that issue during the later days of Occupy, when the movement started becoming unfocused. You know, as you know, I mean, Occupy did an incredible job in the early days of raising the issue of economic equality into the public debate, and it's still there today. I mean, Occupy did an amazing thing, but you know, eventually it started becoming diffused in terms of all the different issues that Occupy was dealing with, which were, you know, all important issues, but it was just hard to, you know, have a consistent message go out. And so I was looking for something that would unite it all. And, you know, the root cause of so many of the issues that Occupy was dealing with was money and politics, that essentially the politicians are bribed through what John McCain calls a system of legalized bribery by corporations and the wealthy to pass laws that favor corporations and the wealthy. And at the expense of everybody else. And the other thing that I was looking for during the days of Occupy was a way for the millions of people around the country that supported and sympathized with Occupy, but were never going to end up in a park or demonstrating, to show their support. And, you know, inspired by some other money stamping groups, I came up with this idea of stamping money as a way that people anywhere, anytime, could show their support and make their voice heard around the country by stamping a message on a dollar bill. Because, you know, when you have a stamp message on a dollar bill like this one, can you see it? Not to be used for bribing politicians.
I had to get myself some of those.
Yeah, you got to get yourself some of those. You go to stampstampede.org and you can get yourself one of these stamps. Stamp it up. Can you see me here stamping it up? Here, look at this. Stamping it up. Stamp it just like that. There it is.
Voila. Love it.
Really easy and fun. You can do it while you're doing a Skype interview. So yeah, it's a good thing. Should I tell them about that? They can use my personal discount.
Well, they code? Can. I think what's great to realize is that it's a grassroots campaign, and so even though there are a lot of national groups, advocacy groups working on this issue, this is a way that, as Ben says, the normal person sitting in their own home can get involved without going to a meeting or joining a club or whatever. It's a nonprofit endeavor. There's over 20,000 people in the country who are currently stamping bills.
25,000.
25,000 people on a regular basis. Each bill, when it goes into circulation, is seen around 900 times. And so it's really the way to get a message into people's brains. Ben's selling his stamps at cost or less.
Or less.
That's such a nonprofit. I think you can give people your discount.
All right, my discount code. These stamps, the state-of-the-art self-inking stamp or the hand stamp and the stamp head, they sell for normally on our website at the low, low price of $10, but I am now going to give you my discount code. That gives you 50% off.
Great.
Discount code is BC, not before Christ, Ben Cohen, 25. BC 25. Enter that on the discount code place on the form. You get half off. Stamp your balls off.
So one of the great things, Ben and I are in competition to sell more stamps through our discount codes. I have a discount code also, but
I think you should give them yours so they have an equal chance.
Well, you know, my discount code is JG25, but you know, it's only Ben is the chief stamper. He's the original stamper.
Yeah, but we should really see, you know, when given the choice, which one they prefer.
So, you know, it's a BOGO. I wouldn't get one free. It's a great deal. And it's legal. That's the incredible thing.
It's legal.
That's probably important to speak about, too, for those people who abide by the laws that are maybe created, maybe not fairly for the most part. But, yeah, so it's legal. I remember seeing your video.
It's not defacing dollars. It's not defacing currency. It's decorating dollars. It's adorning your dollars, beautifying your bucks. It's a petition on steroids. We call it monetary jujitsu, using money to get money out of politics.
Great. So your website there, stampstampede.org. And we'll be sure to, when we post this on social media and to our supporter blast, we'll be sure to put that information as well as the codes with a little bit of friendly competition. And, you know, I definitely am very familiar, you know, with Schenck, with Young Turks. They have the Wolf Pack there, you know, for amending the Constitution. Of course, there's Move to Amend. I recently interviewed with one of the national coordinators for that. And I'm very open to always getting ideas out there. Of course, I'm a strong advocate against the Citizens United decision, you know, working with Ralph Nader in the past as his national ballot access coordinator, his former campaign manager Teresa Amato, author of Grand Illusion, A Myth of Voter Choice and a Two-Party Tyranny, has really taught me a lot, being a lawyer herself, about what Citizens United is all about when it first happened. So I'm very fortunate to have people like that in my circles. As far as amending the Constitution, you know, some people are a little, you know, concerned that once we open up that can of worms and amend it, you know, would people come in and try to amend other things? So that's something that's been addressed, you know, as well as corporations under amending the Constitution. It may be seen that all corporations are maybe not good. I think that there might be some good ones out there, I've been told, you know.
Yeah, none
so,
of them are people.
Yeah.
They're not good, but they're not people.
Fair enough. So we're here to bring about that dialogue, you know, people to discuss, and I'd love to bring people together to really have that informational dialogue amongst ourselves. And I think the bigger thing that we can all agree on is that we've got to get money out of politics. There's no denying that, you know, all these little differences and or not, whatnot, over time, I think will become, for the most part, squashed. So,
well, that's true. And that's the beautiful thing about the Stampede, is that we support all parts of the movement to get money out of politics.
Yeah.
We're just building that overall movement, you know, with this stamp that says stamp money out of politics.
you know,
I think it's awesome. Go ahead.
Because I think what Ben and I came to realize is that no matter what your issue is, whether it's the environment, whether it's whatever, that the underlying problem that's causing all these things is that it's money and politics, that our government, that our politicians do not respond to the needs of people. They respond to the needs of corporations and to wealthy individuals. And, you know, so long as we have that system, we're never going to deal with everybody's favorite individual issue.
I do foresee money and politics and even parties fading away. I really do, because as Ben stated earlier in the interview, the power of social media and the internet, you know, really cannot be underestimated. Again, it's a force, can't be reckoned with. It was a tool, I feel, that our founding fathers were missing when they created the Constitution, as well as in the 60s. You know, if you guys had the internet, I mean, so, you know, knowing history, being informed. And I want to roll into some of the reasons or the problems because of not only the money in politics, but the people who use tools like the two-party system, the Commission on Presidential Debates, mainstream media, and so on to control and intentionally divide us, the powers to be, whether it's Rockefeller, Rothschilds, families of, you know, I just want to fix it. I don't want to point fingers. Let's just fix it. So the money in politics and these problems that I just mentioned, mainstream media and so on, Commission on Presidential Debates, you know, I wanted to go into a question kind of jumping around a bit here. What are your thoughts on drug policy? Of course, we know money in politics, the drug war, Mexico, there's a lot of ties there between our government, CIA, so on. But just wanted to keep it a little more simple. Certain drugs, you know, whether or not, you know, are certainly bad, of course. But do you feel that the government lies to us about certain drugs? Because, for example, David Bronner, Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps, you know, he puts it that they cause more compassionate, spiritual lifestyle. So what effects do you think psychedelics, for example, had on that generation in the 60s? I've never asked a question like this before, but I'm just curious.
My experience with psychedelics got me more in touch with the oneness of all things. And you know, I mean, some people get a glimpse of enlightenment through meditation. Some people get a glimpse through drugs. And at the time, at least, I preferred drugs.
You know, one of the real problems was the government just shut down any rational looking at the at psychedelics, and could they have therapeutic purposes? And there's just starting to be some testing going on now about drugs, hallucinogenics like MDMA or pot for post-traumatic stress disorder. And they're finding some very initial early good findings.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about these drugs, you know, pot and the psychedelics, is that they're consciousness raising. They're not consciousness dulling like alcohol. So, I mean, it always seemed to me that, you know, the prohibition on pot was just the new prohibition in the same way that they had, you know, prohibited alcohol. But I believe the medical opinions are in that pot is a lot less harmful than alcohol.
I mean, at the very least, we should be studying the effects of these drugs and see if there are beneficial effects that that can be helpful to people instead of the government just shutting things down. I mean, the government essentially wants to cut off anything that might have people question their authority. And I think when people use consciousness-expanding drugs, they think about the authorities and what authority they actually have.
That was a beautiful answer, and I'm wasn't sure I was going to ask that question. I'm glad I did, though. I have been studying, and one group that came out really supportive of us during the fast connected to David Bronner is Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies, MAPS.org. They do some great stuff, and they really helped us a lot behind the scenes, and I hope to or look forward to working with them in the future. Also, Amber Lyon, you may know of her. If you don't, I'll try to send some links. She's a whistleblower, used to work with CNN. She now runs Reset.me, the website. So she really ties in from depression to autism, how psychedelics could be a remedy. And I will be interviewing her in the future in the network. And she's a part of our fest, a great friend, and really has that great foresight. So, but thanks for that answer. And so moving to the question, I wanted to wrap up on a little bit on environmentalism, because you touched that a little bit, and Dr. Jill Stein is really quite a advocate in this realm of things, and learned a lot from her. So what do you think finally on the 60s and 70s, what kind of impact do you think it had on environmentalism, especially conscious eating, and how do you see that movement calling to protect our ecosystem from genetically engineered crops?
Well, I think there's a huge movement for people wanting to eat more healthily, to understand where their food comes from, what's in it. The Eat Local and Support Local movement is booming. And as you mentioned, the idea of GMO, genetically modified crops, there's a huge consumer movement in this country that is looking to have mandatory labeling of GMOs in the U.S. in the same way that there's labeling in 64 countries around the world. It's not like it's some radical idea. It's not about if you like GMOs or don't like GMOs. It's simply about a consumer's right to know what's in the food they purchase and they eat.
You know, it's interesting when, you know, when I was heavily involved in the ice cream business, the issue of BGH, bovine growth hormone, came up. And, you know, I started researching it. And, you know, I was kind of shocked to find out that, you know, the Food and Drug Administration, their procedure, well, first of all, their mandate is not to protect the health of the population. Their mandate is to balance the health of the population with corporate profits. And then when you get into how the FDA actually operates, they don't do any testing on any of these additives or chemicals or genetically modified organisms. They require the manufacturer of that additive to do the testing and submit the results, except they don't have to submit the results of all the testing that they do. They can just, it's legal to just submit the results of the tests that came out in your favor. And, you know, what can call me naive, but I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. But that's the way it works.
And I, you know, talking about, you know, your support of GMO labeling and the transition, of course, I have to roll right into Ben and Jerry's ice cream to 100% non-GMO ingredients. And if you can speak about that, and that you're being transparent, you know, with your customers. I mean, you guys do what you say and what you believe in. You're being transparent to your customers about the content of your products and allowing them to make the choice. Wanted you to speak a little bit more about that. And then also, do you envision offering, we had some supporters on Facebook ask, vegan options in the future, you know, and as well as phasing out high fructose corn syrup. So these are some things that, you know, the foresight, but I just love that you guys are shifting and doing what's right. And this is like the first step and shows to the people that you really listen to them. And so I wanted to ask those questions on behalf of them.
Well, so yes, Ben & Jerry's is transitioning to be 100% non-GMO. It'll be transitioned by the end of this year, 2014. You know, and another interesting thing is that Vermont just became the first state in the country to pass a law with no strings attached GMO labeling that's set to go into effect in 2 years in July 2016. And the state was very quickly sued by the Grocery Manufacturers Association to prevent that from going in. And so the state is trying to fight that as well. I think, Christine, I forgot the other things that you... a vegan option.
Right.
I think it makes total sense for Ben & Jerry's to have a vegan option, a non-dairy frozen dessert. You know, fortunately or unfortunately, Ben and I are no longer involved in product development, but I personally would love to see it.
I heard some rumor that the company was actually starting to look into it.
Well, there you go. We can spread rumors.
And that's beautiful. I know our supporters will be happy to see it, because sometimes people can be maybe... I want them to be positive towards what you guys are doing, because it's amazing, exceptional, and sometimes they're going to be like, well, why don't they have vegan? It's like, well, give them a little bit of time. It'll come about if they're taking this first big step going non-GMO. And I'm not surprised to hear there's discussion about vegan. And the other question was about possibly phasing out high fructose corn syrup. That was the other one.
I mean, once again, I'm not involved in that, but I can't imagine that the company's not looking at that as well. I mean, the reason the company is transitioning to non-GMO is from consumer interest. And so when consumers contact Ben & Jerry's about the things they want to have happen, the company responds. And so when people have concerns about corn syrup, they should get in touch with Ben & Jerry's and say, let's have a change.
Great. This is a little bit of a tougher question, as I suppose a journalist or whatnot with the network. And I hope I'm pronouncing it right, and I should have researched it ahead of time, but the pronunciation. What are your thoughts on the ethics of your parent company? And is it pronounced Unilever? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to make sure. In opposing GMO labeling, and does that motivate you to step up your efforts and offer the clout of your legendary brand name to have so much success in states, as you mentioned, like Connecticut and Vermont?
So for those people that don't know, Ben...
It's the toughest question, I promise.
So Ben & Jerry's got bought by Unilever about 12 years ago. Up until that time, Ben & Jerry's had been a public company. Which meant that anybody could purchase shares. And so Unilever essentially offered so much money for the shares of Ben & Jerry's that our board couldn't find an alternative. We would have preferred to stay independent. So, you know, Ben & Jerry's sometimes agrees with what Unilever wants it to do, sometimes doesn't. The agreement between Unilever and Ben & Jerry's allows Ben & Jerry's to take stands on issues like GMO labeling and where it can disagree with Unilever. And, you know, hopefully this is one of those areas where Ben & Jerry's might have a little influence on our parent company, you know, particularly with the wave of consumer interest in GMO labeling. Ultimately, it's going to happen in this country. It may not happen this year. There's a few states that have passed laws so far. There's a ballot initiative coming up in the state of Oregon this year, which Ben & Jerry's is actually going to be involved in campaigning to support mandatory labeling. So I think it's going to happen. It's just a matter of how soon.
Great answer. And I'm sure you guys are maybe already collaborating with David Bronner, Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps in Oregon on the labeling, I hope.
He's amazing.
He is.
He is absolutely amazing. Just the leadership and the commitment that he shows on issues is inspiring. And I'm just in awe of what the guy does. It's incredible.
Yeah, he's a beautiful soul. He lives out here in Encinitas, California, and he was one of our very selfless paid sponsors for the United We Stand Fest, and donated soap. And I can tell you, Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps, that's what I use. I mean, it just, we have a great research team, Alex Fidel and others that just really are like, you should use these products, Christina, and you know, you got to lead by example. And boy, David and you guys are people who lead by example. So I'm glad you are connected, and Free and Equal is happy to be in any ways we can a PR arm hub to help bring about even more awareness towards those amazing endeavors that you guys are doing together or indirectly as well. So thank you. Gosh, you guys, you dip into everything, your lobbying efforts in Washington to get, you know, them cut out the GMO labeling, lobbying efforts that is in Washington to get them cut the budget in half and put towards our communities, that is, the people in D.C. You do a lot of things that are just so active. I'm just reading the list of things going on and on. But I want to go a little bit into back to money and politics and, you know, the stampede, what you're doing there. But, you know, the Democratic politicians say they want to rein in big business. But, you know, really big businesses are their biggest campaign contributors, which is, you know, exact opposites to someone like, for example, Dennis Kucinich. You know, he's a truly, you know, honest man, I found speaking with him. Being a part of our efforts, we're supposed to be interviewing him in the near future too, here on the network. A truly honest man of the people that you have both supported in the past and are working on now with the GMO labeling. Do you think the corporations co-opted by the Democratic Party to create controlled opposition so that the wars and the corporate favoritism continues no matter who wins? That was a question from a supporter.
I do think that there's more similarities than differences between the Republican and the Democratic parties. You know, in terms of the Pentagon budget, it's the same regardless of which party is in office. I mean, they're always trying to increase it. It's. You know, which corporate tool do you want to elect?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Christina, because here in Vermont, there's a public financing option. And for the elections coming up this November, we have a candidate running for lieutenant governor who's a progressive. He's one of a third party candidate, and he qualified for public financing by getting a certain number of small amount of contributions, less than $50, from around the state. And so he's getting money, and there actually isn't a Democratic Party candidate who's running. There's just a Republican and a progressive. So I think at the state level, there are things happening, and I don't think we can expect the leadership to happen at the national level. It's going to be in smaller communities and states that really push things forward.
I just have a few more questions, and you mentioned parties. Myself being an advocate in the electoral arena for about 15 years, started when I was 17 years of age, when my father was knocked off the ballot for governor in Illinois as a third party libertarian candidate. I've always been an independent. Personally, I mean, I worked nationally for Nader in 08. My dad's a libertarian, and he still loves me a lot. So he's just like, do what you got to do. And so that being said, you know, being a huge advocate for many years for third parties, I have seen, and we've spoken about it previously before on the phone, you know, as third parties evolve and they become larger, they inevitably become infiltrated at the national level. And so while the state and local candidates tend to have a purity, they are binded to a certain extent by the national parties, which unfortunately parties just attract people who want power. So how do you feel about this movement that's rising in the polls, Zogby and so on? I can send you some links to that. You've probably already read them, but over 40% of Americans perceive themselves as independents. I mean, that's more than Democrats, Republicans. What is your feeling of parties, the future maybe being independents, individuals? I always like to say the biggest majority is the individual. do you see independents really taking back our government and maybe a parallel movement outside the two-party system, taking our government back peacefully?
Well, I think people deciding that they don't want to support either party, that they want to be an independent, makes all the sense in the world, because neither party is speaking to their interests. And the trend is for more and more people to register as independents. And yeah, I think in general, that's good.
Great. I think a lot of people definitely are seeing maybe independents, according to the polls, are the futures of what I'm seeing. But there are a lot of good people even within the party system, even Democrats, Republicans, maybe really independent. I've seen a lot of them try to run locally as Democrat, Republican candidates, of course, Libertarian, Green, Constitution Party, and so on. But there's, a lot of issues on the electoral arena that stacks, makes it difficult. For example, Ron Paul told our organization directly the last election in 08 that is the number one reason why he didn't run for president in 2008 was because of the restrictive ballot access barriers. It takes a lot of signatures to get on the ballot as a candidate. So you'll find a lot of candidates running as third-party candidates. I can't speak for the individual that you mentioned, but a lot of signatures. The signatures can be very costly. And when you run with third-party candidates, it could be a lower requirement. For example, when I ran for Secretary of State in California in 2010 for Secretary of State, in order to run as an independent, I would have had to get 100,000 signatures. I think it was within a matter of months from registered voters in California. I'm in my late 20s. I just didn't happen to have a couple million dollars in my bank account. So I had to essentially lean on and use the Libertarian line. I would have ran Green, but I just did the Nader job in 08, so I thought I'd cross the spectrum. It only took 300 signatures to get on the ballot. So and they understood where I was coming from as an independent. So that was pretty cool. But as I want to wrap up the interview, really talking about the integrity of our elections, before we do that, did you guys want to talk a little bit more about your projects, the Stampede, Get the Dough Out of Politics? Mention that a little bit more as well, and then we'll wrap up on the electoral arena part, if that works for you.
Right. Well, essentially, the idea behind the Stampede is to help grow this huge and already rapidly growing movement to amend the Constitution and pass federal legislation to keep money out of politics. There's going to be a vote in Congress, in the Senate, in September on this amendment. It's not going to pass, but it's an incredible milestone that has been achieved way ahead of where the movement expected it to happen. So, this is the first vote on the amendment, and it'll continue to be reintroduced, and it'll continue to get more votes. So we're just very psyched about the progress of the movement. And, this method of using a stamp to make your money talk is, so powerful. It's kind of the original viral marketing. It spreads, money moves around the country virally. And now with the internet, we have the ability to do virtual viral marketing and real world viral marketing. And that's very, very powerful.
Couldn't agree more. And so on that note, it seems as if topics we've addressed on the drug policy end and Monsanto, GMOs, and just a variety. Of course, we didn't go as much into NSA. Our internet slowing down is the plan that the government has, to slow us out, to phase us out off of the internet. I don't think that'll happen. It's just people are consciously, there is a conscious, awakening. It's slow, but it's going to catch on, I think, in music. The music, the sound is really, historically, as Ron Paul said, if you're ever going to bring about a revolutionary change, we need two things, the youth and music, or my opinion, we the people, you know, and the music for that matter. So on the electoral arena, you know, everything that I see, you know, here at Freeneco, we're here just to bring everyone together and build them and be that hub, whether it's on the music side, the Hollywood side, the conscious businesses like yourself, Ben and Jerry, you know, taking the time today for this to do this interview, and Bronner's Magic Soap and so on, Nature Pass Food, they're really great as well, great supporters. You know, we're here to bring about the dialogue and the need to reform the electoral system. So the question, you know, wrapped around, you know, what have you noticed about the integrity of our elections? And tell us a bit more about your take on whether it's the quality of, you know, the debates, for example, when the League of Women Voters hosted them versus the current hosting of the elusive Commission on Presidential Debates. Maybe talk a little bit about the Electoral College, gerrymandering, open source software, you know, things that you're passionate about. Would just love to get your feel on the electoral front, because it feels as if these are the keys that we need to put into a door, lock, unlock, resolve, you know, throughout this movement, and educate ourselves and, of course, get the right people in office too, and giving them truly a free and equal chance of winning. But wanted to get a feel of where what your feelings are on the electoral system overall.
I mean, overall, I think people are getting less excited about voting. I think people really question about whether their vote matters, that are the candidates who are running, are they really going to represent me? And, you know, it's just in a country like ours, it's astounding to me that we maybe only get 50% of eligible people out to vote. And I think it's just a statement about the system and how people are not excited because they don't feel like the system's working. We need to change it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty true. I think that, you know, we had a real potential problem when the actual voting system itself switched to black box voting. You know, there was no longer a paper trail. I mean, if there was a question about whether the votes had been tampered with, there was no way to audit. But I think that activists got heavily involved in that early on. And my understanding is that a paper trail will exist, that's the direction that the actual voting machinery is moving. But, you know, the idea that, you know, the Commission on Presidential Debates, you know, only allows essentially Democrats or Republicans is, you know, it's a disservice to the country. And, you know, it's just another example of how it's Republicans and the Democrats that are running the show.
Yeah, in 2008, I'll never forget Ralph Nader. My role was to get him on the ballot. I just happened to be at this event where he was being interviewed by all the press. And the three of us that had press passes, the two guys that were with me, forgot their passes. So I got to go in with Ralph one-on-one and walk around with him for hours setting up interviews. And I was like, I'm not handing over this pass to you guys. Sorry. You know, and walked in with him. And I'll never forget, he looked at me and it rings in my ears. If he only knew how inspirational this moment was, and I can't word it exactly by memory, I'll do my best. But he said, Christina, look around here. He says, I could sit down and interview with every single one of these media outlets right now, Christina, but I wouldn't even reach 3-5% of the people that the Commission on Presidential Debates reaches. And it was from that point on, I thought to myself, okay, it's time to sell my jewelry business. I am destined to do something that brings people together. I love this. I love working with people. I'm okay with putting myself out there. And next thing you know, a couple months later, that dialogue triggered me to create the first alternative televised presidential debate ever in 2008, aired by C-SPAN. And Ralph Nader was there, and Constitution Party candidate Chuck Baldwin crossed the spectrum. And so that was the creation of Free and Equal Elections. And since then, I've learned how the commission, you know, $40, $50, $60 million is funneled in by the powers to be, the Rockefeller, Rothschild, whoever it may be, who then in return use that money to air, you know, to ABC, CBS, NBC to air. It becomes sponsors in return and essentially becomes a tool, a destructive tool to intentionally divide us. As you mentioned, a game of the back and forth, the tug of war. And on the bigger issues, NSA, NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. I mean, all these topics we didn't have able to touch, but we will in the future for future interviews. Drones and so on. Gosh, what's going on in Gaza? I mean, that's a whole nother interview and a half, or interviews for that matter, a story. I realized that this is my destiny, and I had to let go of everything. Don't bite off more than you can chew. And I want you to know that working with individuals like you two keeps me going. You know, the fast we spoke about a little briefly before this interview of what happened with UCLA, you know, we did everything right contractually on our end. It was still canceled by UCLA, and it happens. But, you know, I've become stronger because of it, and I feel that there were people at UCLA that genuinely maybe wanted it to happen, maybe a lot that didn't, for that matter. But the show still went on, and I'm really thankful that you guys really understand the difficulties, and that here at Free and Equal, we are rising through that. And I'm so thankful for your time today on the show, being a party, you know, United We Stand Festival video. But I promise you, when we hold this next summer in Colorado, is what we're looking at. I'm going out there next month before announcing it, that you are more than welcome, both of you, to come there and scoop your non-GMO ice cream to our supporters at our fests, and hopefully eventually vegan ice cream and no corn fructose, you know. And so I would love to have you guys out there and to meet you in person and give you a hug and thank you for really doing what you do, which is far beyond and so inspirational.
So great talking with you, Christine. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Lots of love, and please stay on. I'm going to say goodbye to everybody now, and we'll keep you on just for a few plugs, if that's okay. And thank you again, Ben and Jerry, so much for your time today. Cool guys, exciting, so real. And you're teaching me, as things change here, it's important to always be real, never to lose your true inner self, and be connected with people. So thank you for joining the Free and Equal Network. Until next time, Christina Tobin, lots of love to all of you, everyone out there. Thank you again for joining the Free and Equal Network.